Podcast. I'm Dave Good. This is Dan Mayer. And
hello.
We are here to talk to you about subpoenas, what to do when you get a subpoena. This is going to be fun because what we're going to do is I'm going to explain everything I know about subpoenas at the top of the episode. And then Dan, a real actual lawyer who has a law degree and is barred in the state of Maryland, will tell me everything that I got wrong. I actually kind of know a decent bit about this, so I'm not going to make a total fool out of myself, but I'm going to make mostly a fool out of myself. So this will be fun.
That's a wow. Okay. You're selling it now. Okay. So let's see what you got there.
All right. So a subpoena, and you can even just correct me right at the top, is a request from another party to show up at a certain time with certain information, usually from a lawyer, I mean, or always from a lawyer. I don't even know. But it is a request to show up with information. It is not a mandate that you have to share that information, because the information that you share must comport with the law. And people can make all sorts of requests about what you have to share, what they want you to share. That doesn't mean you necessarily are compelled to comply with it. But it means basically, please give us this information, whether it's showing up for a deposition, for testimony, or just a records request, or just specific bits of information. That's the first part. How'd I do with like part one?
Well, let's talk about the actual legal definition of subpoena, which you mostly got, right?
Mostly. Awesome.
Right. So the lay person who's listening is going to say, yeah, Dave, you're right. Right. And I would say, okay, great. Well, it is a legal document or legal notice that requires someone to appear in court, right, as a witness, right? Sometimes you may even see things that are called subpoena, and I'm going to totally screw up on this Latin, even though I'm an attorney myself.
I should tell you that I did take Latin in middle school, so I will be judging you.
I totally just butchered this, okay? And I should probably look up the actual pronunciation, but basically, there are some also subpoenas that can subpoena you for evidence, such as, you know, hey, I want your records, like your healthcare records, right? That don't necessarily demand that a person show up to court to testify or a deposition to testify. But ultimately, it is a legal notice that is summoning someone to do something, is the way I describe it, laypersons. And attorneys who are probably listening, if they are listening, are probably cringing and saying, what are you talking about, dude? But that's my layperson definition for those not in the legal profession. Okay. So that's what I would say to that. So I would say I'd give you about a B minus. How about that?
B minus. I'll take that. Okay. So the next part about a subpoena, and this where I think I'm going to get an A, is if you get one, call a lawyer.
Okay, that's A+. I'll give you that.
Hey.
Plus.
There you go. Because we, as practitioners, don't know what the heck we are doing when we get a subpoena. The worst thing you can do is, if you get a subpoena for somebody's mental health records, is just be like, oh, all right, let me send that along. Don't do that, because you need a lawyer to look at the subpoena, tell you what is being requested and what your obligations are under the law. And it might not be just provide records without consent from your patient or without a court order. It may be that that's not something you can do. Also, when you get a subpoena, it is usually, or it should be, specific about what is being requested. And it's good to have an attorney look over like what exactly is being requested and what you need to provide and what would conflict with whatever laws of whatever state you're in. All right. How am I doing?
Because you're new to the podcast, I'm going to be nice and grade you on a curve and give you a B on that one. Okay. So first of all, what he said is everything he said is correct. Let's put it, make that clear. I want to kind of fill in some gaps here for people here. First and foremost, because this is a legal document, if you're listening, you're a practitioner, you're an expert, presumably, in what you do. Nobody expects you, and you should not presume that you are an expert in the law. I'm not expecting you to be able to take, you know, if you get a subpoena, to look at it and say, okay, here's what I need to do. Here's where I need to be. Here's what, you know, I should know or not know. This is where having an attorney you're working with currently or seeking one out can be really useful, because as Dave alluded to, the stakes are really high, because if you screw up, you probably will violate state law. You definitely will violate federal law. And there are very specific confidentiality and privacy laws in place that protect your clients' records and information. So it's really serious. You know, I wish I could sit here and tell you that attorneys don't play games. And I want to be very clear here that I am not in any way saying that attorneys you may deal with are unethical. I don't cast that aspersion at all. But attorneys' jobs are to represent their clients. And if they can get information, and that's their job to help their clients, and that's what they will try to do. And that's why they issue subpoenas. So if you are unwilling, you know, unwittingly giving them information, then you've given them information. They can use that information. That's theirs to use. But you are the one who now who is potentially created a situation where you could have violated the law, and that liability is on you for that. You know, all states as a rule have, you know, rules on how subpoenas should be issued. So in Maryland and in most cases, they need to be served on you. Okay, so that's the first question right there is, was the subpoena, when it was given to you, was it served properly? In all states, they have their own laws to say, here's how you do service. Service has to be done X, Y, Z, following these steps. And if it's not done, then improper service has occurred, and that can call into question the subpoena. Okay, so right then and there, that's a way to potentially get around having to respond to a subpoena. But how would you know that unless you talk to an attorney? So that's one reason why you want to be talking to an attorney about this. Make sure that that subpoena was issued properly, that the attorney or whoever issued the subpoena is following the proper steps here.
Is it the service process, is it like it is in movies where they jump out of the bushes and hand the thing to the person and then take a photo of it or whatever, like in that one Matthew Perry movie?
I mean, theoretically, I guess that's a way to do it, is you say, okay, like, I got you. Hey, by the way, you've been served. Sure.
I mean, I know as a practice owner, the state has my address and I can be, so that I can be served at that place. So it's not going to be a game for them. I'll just show up.
So each state has its own rules. Like Maryland has its own rules too. Maryland can be delivered to someone's house if someone is 18. You know, but generally, the reason I don't want to go into specifics here is because I don't want people saying, okay, that's what I need to follow here. Mm. Just know there are rules in place that need to be followed to how the subpoena is delivered.
Well, it doesn't really pertain to our actions.
Right.
We're not serving. It's really just somebody else. And right. Then we hire a lawyer and they ask, how are you served?
And right. Then that's the point. Right. Exactly. So if you think that maybe this wasn't done properly, definitely consult with an attorney, but the attorney can tell you that. The subpoena that you get then is going to tell you, you know, what is being demanded. Is it documents? Is it testimony? You know, the Maryland subpoenas say, you know, have boxes you can check off. If mental health records specifically are being requested, very often I've seen subpoenas written, you know, we are not requesting mental health or healthcare records, or we are requesting mental health records, right? So they'll very clearly specify that. You know, it'll typically tell you if you're being demanded that you show up somewhere to testify, it will tell you where and how the deposition or testimony is going to be taking place. What time is it? What's the date? It'll tell you who is demanding this information, right? And that tells you a very important point. What is the subpoena relation to? If it's regarding a case, for example, involving your client, it's going to tell you the case name. It's going to tell you the attorney who's requesting it and who they represent. So all this information is usually on a subpoena and tells you. Again, I'm not expecting you to sit here and say, okay, I can figure all this out on my own. Maybe you can. And if you're reasonably confident you can, well, that's fine. Then you do you. But don't get it wrong.
Doesn't sound like the consequences would be very good for your client if you got it wrong.
Well, for example,
for you.
There are times where maybe you are required to comply with the subpoena, or times where a court is ordering you to appear. In that case, then if you're not complying, that also can have implications for you. So that's why this is important. But kind of going to what we're talking about right now, you know, when you first get the subpoena in your hand, all this information is there telling you exactly what's happening, where it's happening, what's being requested.
Fabulous. So what it comes down to is a lawyer can help walk you through what exactly is being requested and then what parts of that request you are obligated to comply with, or how you're obligated to comply with it, or whether you're obligated to comply with it. Mm-hmm. And if not, then we get to what is really a lovely word, which is quashing the subpoena. Mm-hmm. Now, I don't know exactly what that means, other than it sounds like whenever I think about that, I imagine a lawyer like taking a subpoena and stepping on it and squishing it like a bug.
Well, it's sort of like that.
Oh, cool. What is it actually like?
Well, you know, in reality, if someone issues a subpoena and you don't agree with it or you want to oppose it, then yes, you would file a motion essentially opposing the subpoena, saying, you know, this should not happen or this should not be requested. Here's why this is improper or why these records shouldn't be or why these records are protected, or whatever it is. I want to be very clear that practitioners, this is the area where if you play golf, you're in the weeds here. If you start getting into this area, it's very easy to mess up. Most practitioners should not be in this area and making these decisions on their own. That's right. Where, again, consulting the attorney can say, okay, here's what options we have. Here's how we're going to handle this. And then if they need to file a motion with the court, they can. What I will tell you as a general rule, at least in Maryland with us and our clients who are practitioners, is if a client gets a subpoena, typically then we will figure out who's issuing the subpoena. So I want to talk about what are the scenarios that you might get a subpoena then. In general, we see this a lot in Maryland. If you work as a practitioner with minor clients, so anyone under the age of 18, there's a separation of divorce and now child custody is in question. Who gets to have custody of the child, whether it's legal and or physical? If the parents or the attorneys know that the children are in therapy, especially if it's regarding to their relationship with their parents or something regarding divorce, it's very possible that one of the attorneys may say, I want to know the records. I want to know the information of what's being discussed. I've seen situations where, one parent's trying to show the other parent's not fit. If you have yourself, if you're doing couples therapy, right? And now you have, a couple who you're working with and now they're going through a divorce. It's very possible that one or the other might then say, I want to copy those records because obviously the issues that they're working therapy for might very well be the issues that are why they're getting divorced. If there's a civil or criminal investigation involving you, an employer contractor of yours, or a client is involved in some sort of personal injury or some sort of product liability litigation or slip and fall or something like that. And, in addition to whatever other medical treatment they're receiving, they're getting, or receiving therapy to help deal with some of the mental trauma. So it's very common in that case that you might get a subpoena from one of the parties, saying, hey, we want to know what's going on here? What's going on with this person's, mental status and what treatment they're getting? Because that may directly correspond to what's being argued in with regards to that litigation case. When there's a board investigation or an investigation by another state or federal regulatory agency, things like that, this is where we see them most often in these type of cases. So all of these are pretty serious and all of them carry weight. In some cases, you are required to release information. In other cases, you may not be. But those are the scenarios. So what I would simply say when it comes to subpoenas is you need to figure out who is the party asking, why are they asking, and what's the situation? And that's where your attorney can help you with, or if kind of figure that information out and go to the attorney and talk to him and say, here's what's happening, that can be useful. It also then gives you kind of preemptive. Now my client, so-and-so, her parents are getting divorced. This is from the attorney for the father. So now right off the bat, who's involved, what parties are, what the situation is.
I'm wondering if you can talk a little bit, and I know we can speak specifically mm-hmm. to Maryland.
Yeah.
Are there any protections for that? Let's say it's a divorce dispute. Mm-hmm. You as a therapist think that disclosing this information and having the records be a part mm-hmm. of the court proceedings sure. might be harmful to your minor patient. What provisions are there?
So I want to back up before we get to that point, because that's a very specific point, and I want to make a broader point here before we get to that point.
Let's do it.
Many states likely have, Maryland does, have additional protections for mental health records. Maryland carves out a special exemption or special status for mental health records separate from other medical records. Right. So in the case of a litigation situation where, medical records can be requested, you are not necessarily able to decline releasing those records if you're subpoenaed, in a case of litigation involving injury, for example. But Maryland says mental health records are different. We treat them differently. They have a special, there's more steps you have to take before we can allow you to release those. And so other states may have similar rules. So now, it's not just as simple as, an attorney subpoenas you and says, I want these records. I've had these conversations with attorneys in Maryland where I'm like, no, I'm sorry, I can't do that. I need to have either a written authorization from the client, from the actual therapy client, permitting us to release this to you, or I need to have the court order us, which is, you know, HIPAA does, you know, provide for, Maryland law provides for that. If a court orders it, that's the end of it. Like, court orders the record, when it's the records, you know, then you're required to comply in most cases.
Yeah, that's the ball game.
That's the ball game.
If a judge tells you to do it, you do it.
And I've had situations where an attorney's like, no problem. And like, it was like 11 a.m. on that day. And like 4 p.m., I had a court order from the judge on my desk, you know, saying, release these records. So great, get the records. But don't be trying to figure this out on your own, because the pitfalls here, there's a lot of holes that you can fall into right here if you mess up on this. And trying to figure out what exactly is the rules that apply to this specific subpoena, and you know what you should or shouldn't do here, it can be very precarious. The other thing to know, when you're just as kind of a practical point, if I am a client of yours, a therapy client, and I have a case where I got injured and I'm suing someone, and you inadvertently release those records to the opposing party, you might have just damaged my case.
Yeah, that's no good.
So if all of a sudden I can't collect the $1 million that I believe I'm owed because of the injury to me, who do you think I'm going after?
Yep.
I'm going to go after you, the therapist, because you just tanked my case and you didn't have the right or authority to release those records, and you did. You violated federal law. You may have violated your state law. And now I have a civil claim potentially against you. Am I trying to scare you? No. But do I want you to be aware that this, the ramifications here can be serious? Yes. And that's why, again, we've said this now 4 or 5 times, consult with an attorney. Okay. But in Maryland, for example, to your point, there are specific rules on how that can happen, how you can release records. So generally the approach that I tell clients is with it as an attorney is to say, okay, let's reach out. If this is a subpoena for records for a client of yours from opposing counsel, most cases, the attorney for that client, your therapy client, already knows. They've already gotten a copy of that subpoena. They should know or already knew that it was coming. And so we might call them up and say, hey, we got the subpoena. Are you going to authorize us to release the records here? How do you want to handle this? And
if a client says, yeah, go for it, then
right. Cool. Attorney might say, yeah, that's fine. We want a copy anyway. So why don't you give us a copy? We'll release a copy to the opposing counsel and we'll go from there. That's the easiest, right? That's the easiest. Great, because the clients are essentially requesting it. They can just sign an authorization to release it to them and an attorney. You're done. The client and the attorney can handle however they want to handle at that point. It's when the attorney says or the client says, no, I do not authorize you to do that. Right? You may not release those records. In the conversation I have with the attorney for the client at that point is, yeah, okay, so if you're going to oppose this, are you going to handle this? A lot of times in my experience, the attorney for your therapy client will say, yeah, we're going to handle this. Like, we're not allowing that to happen. And they'll go fight it out in court with the opposing counsel.
I get to just sit here and twiddle my thumbs and let the process play out. And I don't have to worry myself over it.
Right. And then to your point, I don't need to then file some of the quashed subpoena. Sometimes I've seen situations where the client, your therapy client's attorney will issue you a subpoena. And usually then I call up the attorney and I say, why are you issuing me a subpoena? Like, you want
the records. Seems unnecessary.
The records. But what they will say, and I agree with this, is they are doing it for the record. This is a procedural move, right? You know, when they issue the subpoena to that practice, the copy goes to the opposing counsel, right? Great. We know that we can sign an authorization, but I needed it just for the record, you know, put this on the record. I'm subpoenaing the records, right? I also see that often when, and I do not want to go into more too far into this area because it's the whole conversation itself, but when you have a best interest attorney, if a best interest attorney appears all of a sudden, they are an attorney that's been appointed by the court to act in the best interest of the child. They have the authority to ask and get those records because they're acting on behalf of the court. So sometimes I've seen them issue subpoenas. And in that case, then again, it's the same thing. It's for the records, you know, just part of the process. Sure, you know, let's figure out a way for you to get the records to me. So not always is it something that, you know, it's adversarial. It could just be a matter of process and just figure out, well, what do we need to do? Is someone going to authorize us? Is someone not going to authorize us? You know, if they're going to say no, then does, what's the next step? Does it become adversarial? Who is the opposing counsel asking? Right? These are a lot of questions. And I don't have answers for you listening because it does vary on case-by-case basis on what's happening with your specific case. But these are all the considerations you're going to take into account, your attorney's going to take into account when they're weighing how we're going to respond to the subpoena. Now, there is a really important point about payment. There are costs associated, though, with you producing those records. If you have to produce a paper file, for example, you are entitled to charge the client. But then if you're going to have fees that you charge the client, you better make sure those are in your informed consent. Those are not things, in my opinion, that you can all of a sudden out of the blue say to the client, oh, yeah, by the way, you owe me a $200 for your records. If I'm the client's attorney, I'm like, no, I don't. But I've had situations where all of a sudden there's a fee, there's a cost associated with you know, either the deposition or producing records or whatever it is. And I've gone to the attorney for the client. I've said, here's the informed consent they signed. Here's where it says the fees. Please pay us. And the attorney then says, I've literally said, okay, sure, we'll handle it. No problem. Because they know their client agreed to this already up front. So you're allowed to get paid. Now, this leads me to my next point. What happens if the subpoena is not for documents? Or what if you've already handled the document issue? What if now all of a sudden a subpoena shows up? Or in addition to the records, it says, we are subpoenaing you, the practitioner, to appear at a deposition or provide testimony at a hearing or whatever it is. First thing, as you imagine I'm going to say.
Do it. Just
you
say
have
it.
Not, you have not consulted an attorney up to this point. This is absolutely the place where you should be consulting with an attorney. Okay. At the very minimum, they can help prepare you for this testimony and go over it's you absolutely if you're going to testify or provide a deposition, you must tell the truth. You're being sworn in. But as opposed to preparing you for the questions you might get. And just, you know, if you've never been in a situation where you have an attorney firing questions at you, that can be a really intimidating circumstance. There's also the fact that you, as a practitioner, if you've been providing therapy to someone and now you're being subpoenaed to testify, there are only certain things that you can testify to. I can't ask you questions like, you know, in your opinion, what do you think about this? Or hypothetically, how about this or that? Because that's not what you have knowledge about. You have knowledge about what did you do? What did the client say to you? What does the record say? So, a lot of times when a client therapist is giving testimony, that is your testimony. And those are what the questions should center on is what did the client tell you during this session? What, you know, in this record, you said this, or you wrote this. Can you elaborate on that? Your job as a therapist or testifying in those cases typically may be to just speak to the record. If an attorney wants someone to provide an expert opinion, there are certain rules very often who license type wise can provide that, first of all. Secondly, they can hire an expert witness to evaluate their client and then sit and provide testimony. That's where going to your point about TV shows, right? You see LA Law. Oh, Dr. So-and-so, can you tell me about the mental state of this client at the time of the murder, right? Well, those are expert witnesses they've hired to evaluate their clients. That is not the therapist providing therapy.
Yeah, so the therapist is really just for what happened, what did you do, how did they react, correct, and nothing else. And I appreciate that your reference for procedural crime drama was LA Law. That's showing your age there a little bit, buddy.
Well, of course. Or I'm watching All Rise now, which is it's great. And you know that also has people being doing that, providing testimony and stuff. But that's the reality is if you release records to an attorney, they've gone through them now, and now they may have follow-up questions for you. And that's why then they may issue a subpoena saying, okay, now I've gone through the records and I have more questions for you. And so now I want you to sit for a deposition. I'm going to ask you about the records. I'm not going to go into deposition prep today because that's a whole nother area. And that's something that you can consult and should just consult with an attorney about how to do. And they can talk to you about how to answer, things to expect and things like that. But I wanted to bring that to your guys' attention. The other thing I'm going to say is, going back to the point I made about release of records, it does also apply to your testimony. If I release records, a client signs an authorization saying, I will allow you to release records, that is not an authorization to testify. Unless the client specifically states, you have my authority to provide testimony, they did not do that. They just said, release records. That's what they authorized. So if all of a sudden an attorney shows up and says, I want you to testify now, my response is going to be, you know, not unless the client signs off on it or you have a court order, because that testimony is linked already to the mental health records. And I've seen attorneys make that argument. Well, I'm not asking questions about the treatment they provided. I just have some general questions. But by the fact that you're subpoenaing a therapist to testify to their treatment of that client, you are, in fact, asking them about information related to the services to the treatment provided. So it does fall under mental health exceptions, in my opinion.
Got it.
And that's a big nuance. And so that, again, is why if you're in California or Colorado or Texas or Michigan or wherever else you are, it is really important you consult with an attorney here for this exact reason. Is that
yeah, they'll know the specific state laws pertaining to this, and they'll be able to advise you which ones apply where you are located.
Right. A couple quick points I just want to throw out there for people. And if it helps when you're consulting with your attorney to discuss these, that's fine. You know, if you do agree to sit for a deposition, right, or to testify, some basic things to remember, okay? I mentioned this already. Your job is to tell the truth, right? Your job is to tell the truth about what the record says. That's what you know. So speak to what you know. Don't sit there and guess. Don't sit there and make up things or speculate. That's not your job. Your job is to ask or to answer questions about what you know, what you witnessed, what you wrote in the file. Typically, unfortunately, depositions can last anywhere from 30 minutes all the way up to three. I've seen them all the way last up to 3 hours.
They can go beyond that too, depending on
the... Yeah, but I'm saying on average, the ones I've attended at least 7, 8, or 9 in the last couple of years, the longest was like three hours. The shortest was like 45 minutes. It really depends on the circumstance. It's always okay to ask for clarification. You know, Mr. Attorney or Mrs. Attorney, I don't understand the question. Can you please clarify? Sure, they will. Since you're testifying to the facts, since you're testifying to the record, if they say, well, in this note, on this date, you stated this. In my opinion, as you know, if I'm advising my clients, you have every right to say, can I see the record, please? Can I refresh my memory? And the attorney should be able to then produce that record and say, yep, here you go. Here's the record. Does this, you know, and they might even do it automatically. Say, hey, by here, on this date, you said this. Here's the record. Can you please tell me what was going on? Your job as a licensed counselor, in most cases, unless you're and in the past have provided expert testimony, you are not an expert witness. So don't do that. The other thing I'll tell you is unless this is a case that directly involves you or there's an issue against your license, in most cases, if this involves your clients, one thing to kind of help you take a step off the ledge if you're really in a panic or just overwhelmed by all this is remember that you're not the focus of the legal proceedings. The attorney and the judge and the plaintiffs and the defendants and whoever else, they don't care about you specifically. They want what you know. That's what they're at. That's what they're trying to get at, right? It's not, you are not being targeted. You are not being punished here, but you have information they want, and that's what's happening. That's the focus here. So just remember, this is a process thing, right? They're just trying to get more information to help their case. Each attorney is trying to do that. And even the opposing counsels, you know, I tell clients of mine who face really rough questioning, at the end of the day, try to remember that this attorney is just doing their job. They're trying to, you know, help their own client out here.
Right. Everybody has their own interests in this proceeding,
right.
And you are but a mere pawn.
Yeah.
In right. What that is.
One other point, and I made this earlier, is the reason I say don't speculate, don't guess, is because you're under oath. And if you say something that's not true or you intentionally lie and it contradicts the record, the attorneys are going to take your deposition, your testimony, and they're going to go back and they're going to go through it. And they're going to compare that to the records. And they are going to find that discrepancy. And best case scenario, they might say, we want to call you again to testify and ask you more questions because what you told us in the deposition doesn't match up with what the record says. Worst case scenario, they say you just committed perjury. You lied on the stand. We put you under oath and you lied.
Which is why the answer, I don't know or I don't recall, assuming that it is true that you don't know or don't
recall. Best answer.
Is a great answer,
and great
answer as opposed to wildly speculating what happened back then. If you don't remember, say you don't remember.
I don't know and I don't recall are your best friends, as long as it's true. There is no right, harm I mean, in you telling an attorney, you know what, that happened 3 years ago. I don't recall. I'm really sorry. I just know what's in the records. Whatever the records say is what happened.
You know, it is what a lot of people in bad faith use. I'm specifically remembering some testimony before Congress by Attorney General Alberto Gonzalez, where he said, "I don't know about a zillion times about things he's." I mean, I guess it would be defamatory for me to say he's super new about it, but whatever. So yeah, it's something people have used in bad faith, but also if you actually don't know or don't recall, say that it's fine. Like, what are they gonna do? Let's say, yes, you do. We can prove that you do know. Like, they can't say that.
Well, unfortunately, in most cases, I'm hoping, like if you're a practitioner, you're testifying, this is not a situation where you are testifying to something that you did wrong. Because that's a totally different case, right? Then we're talking about possible civil or criminal liability involving you. The stakes all change. Everything that I just mentioned to some extent goes out the window. And if you're not consulting with an attorney, you don't have an attorney, then please, please, please get one immediately. But really, most practitioners on a day in and day out basis, if you're going to have this happen, it's going to happen because of a client of yours, and you're just being asked questions by an attorney who wants information regarding a case that you just happen to be a third party holder of the records and information. And that's where saying, I don't know, you don't know. If you know, then tell. If you don't know, you don't know. Right. And if they want to then ask you more follow-up questions, and this is the other point I'll say, be prepared that the client or the attorney may ask you questions you have no idea what the answer is to. You may not have any be prepared for any time and the question they ask, right? You may say, I don't recall this. Okay, well, on this date, though, you said that the client said this. Did the client say that? I don't recall. But you noted that the client was acting in this way or that way. Do you recall that? Possibly, yes. The point is your testimony to the record. So testify the record. That's it.
Keep it
That's the end of it.
simple.
Right.
Keep it
Keep it simple.
simple.
I want to go back to payment now. A lot of practitioners get really, I feel like they clench up a bit when it comes to payment, but your time is valuable. If all of a sudden you have to testify, right? If you're testifying person, first of all, plan on the fact that that's going to take up your day. Because a lot of times, unless you're like very first case being called, you're going to sit there waiting. And if you're driving a half hour, an hour to the court, then you're driving an hour and a half hour back to your office. Guess what? You can bill for all that. That's all time that's taking up, that is taking you away from what you do as a business, as a professional, get paid for, right?
We have it in our informed consent
Correct.
documents what the rates are and the provisions on what we will bill, including travel time. And the rates are different than our typically hourly rate
Correct.
mainly because I don't want to really ever do this. And if somebody's going to make me do it, then I want to get paid a little bit more than what I usually get paid for what I actually want to do.
I'm going to expand on that, and I'm going to say, if you bill $200 a session, and normally, let's say, I mean, Dave, you can tell me if I'm totally off base here, but like 10 clients a day, let's just say.
There's no way in hell I'm seeing 10 clients a
I'm
day.
just saying, okay, let's say six clients a day.
Yeah, let's go with that.
Okay, all right, six clients a day.
For me, it's usually after six, my brain turns to mush and then I'm useless to
Fair
everyone.
enough,
So.
right? But $200 a session, six clients on an average day. Right. You may have notes, you may have follow-ups with other clients you have to do, whatever it is you're going to do. If you run a practice, right, you're a practice owner, you're doing other stuff, supervising people, making sure things are happening, billing's going out, right? Your time is valuable. So the very first thing is absolutely put this in your informed consent. If you want me to testify, if you want me to do certain things or show up, here's what our fee is. And I am not opposed to saying, I want $3,000. I want $2,000. Why? Because if I'm an attorney or I'm a client and I really want you to do it, it better be worth it. Right. So if it's really that means that much to me or I really need it, then I will pay that fee to get you there. Then yes. Right. So you could do it
Pretty
as a
much.
flat fee and say, you need to pay me $2,000 within 15 days of the time I'm supposed to show up, or however you want to phrase it. Or you could do it my rates this per hour. But it's important that you list that out, the client signed to it on the informed consent. So that way, if you do end up testifying, having to go in person, now you've covered your time and expense driving there, time and expense driving back, the time it takes you to sit waiting for that case to be called, the time it takes you to sit in deposition. If it's virtual, obviously you take out the travel time, but you're still waiting for the deposition to start via Zoom or whatever platform they're using. Now you're sitting in that position for however many hours it is. If there's a break, 15-minute break? Absolutely. Because you're not in session. You're not doing your job. So, you know, again, this is where you put this in your informed consent. I've successfully had attorneys pay us in those cases where I've been able to go back to them and say, here's the informed consent. Your client signed it. You know, we need to be paid like this. No, the client's not going to pay it. No problem. Okay, well, I've had situations too then where the court orders it. Great, we show up. And by the way, client, you're discharged. Sorry, I'm not working with you anymore. Right? You knew what my fees were. You didn't want to pay work with me. Here's some community referrals, but I'm not doing this again. I'm not going down this road. As you and your husband fight out in court next 6 months over your divorce, I'm not doing it. Right. And you have a right to say that. I mean, you right. have a continuum of care. You have to make sure that you discharge this person properly. And yeah. you give them community referrals, you do all that type of stuff. But there is nothing that says you have to see this client if they're not going to willing to pay you for their time.
Well, it's part of just any informed consent where that's how it works. You compensate me for my time and I give you my time. If suddenly you say I'm not going to compensate you, that changes the agreement that you made and you have to decide how you want to proceed. If you thought it was in your client's best interest not to release the information, such as a part of a divorce proceeding where you don't want your 13-year-old's, your 13-year-old client's information being shared because it could be damaging to them. Sure. Do you have options?
So what I would say is it depends on your state. And I definitely agree that as a therapist, you may have ethical concerns about, look, the release of these records could severely harm my client or cause harm to them or someone else. Those are legitimate concerns to consider. Everyone listening is going to hate my answer. And you know what I'm going to say, which is consult with an attorney.
Lord.
If a client came to me and said that, though, right, my response as attorney in Maryland would be, okay, what's considered a circumstance? What's happening? Why are you concerned, right? I'm going to just make up a scenario off the top of my head. You know, if a client says to me, look, there's five different reports of CPS reports have been filed, you know, Child Protective Services. I was a mandated reporter. There's abuse. We're concerned that this child is, you know, both parents have physical custody. One of the parents is the one who is involved in potentially committing abuse. And now we're about to now we're being required to release records to show, you know, what the client talked to us about. Like, I'm worried this child's going to go over that parent's house and, you know, could suffer further harm, or they don't want to go be with their father who abused them. You know, how do I handle this? In that case, then there may be times where we may need to approach the court and say, we don't feel comfortable releasing these records. The court might still order it. The judge might then order a privileged attorney or a best interest attorney to step in at that point. Privileged attorneys, essentially in Maryland, at least, is a best interest attorney light. They are appointed by the court to solely focus on the records issue and figure out what needs to be done with those records. So long story short, what that means is the court might say, let's have an independent attorney review this and determine what we need to do here. The judge themselves could order the release and say, I want to see the records and I'll make a determination of what we need to release here. So there's things we could do. And if it sounds like I'm hedging myself, I'm not, but I want to be careful here because this is really going to be case specific.
Sure, right? Sure.
And this is where it really is going to come down to the nitty gritty now. And, you know, but I definitely agree there may be considerations here that need to be taken into account to protect this client. Okay.
Okay. So the long and short of it is there are processes that can be explored to figure out what can be done for that client. There are some protections in at least at least in Maryland and beyond, probably too.
Yeah, absolutely. So on this same point, I want to talk about best practices, especially if you are a practice owner. One topic that comes up is, well, what happens if my practitioner who works for me receives a subpoena? And I always answer a question with a question in that case. And I see, and I've had these conversations with the practitioner client, and I say, well, what does happen? Well, I don't know. That's why I'm consulting with you. Well, that's a problem. Because if you don't know, how does your clinician who received the subpoena supposed to know what to do?
Stop down. Have a policy.
Yeah. So absolutely. This needs to be a policy. If you have people working for you as contractors or especially as employees, then you should have policies in place. Here's how they handle subpoena, right? Generally, my general advice is that a practitioner receives a subpoena regarding a client, especially if they were being asked to release records. You do not want that clinician just releasing records on their own. I've had that happen. Does not go well. A lot of attorneys and a lot of clients get very pissed off, and it causes a much big cluster, you know, F than you want, right? When we could have just avoided all of that. So the policy of some sort should be, if you receive a subpoena, you're required to let your supervisor know, your management of the practice know, and we can make the determination what needs to happen at that point. If there's a release of records that needs to happen, we can have that discussion and figure out what needs to happen. But you as a practice owner, or your people working for you, the clinical director, practice manager, whoever it is, someone else needs to be aware of and figure out what's going on. So that's pretty much what I wanted to cover. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks, everyone.
As always, if you have questions, if you comments, if you want to critique us, if you want to correct us, please do reach out. You can go on our Facebook page. Go ahead.
And if you would like to grade my performance at the top of the episode, and you think Dan was a little too unfair, and you know it's 2023 or 2024, depending on when we release this, and grade inflation, you feel free to grade me on a curve, unlike this guy.
I would just want to point out, because I think this is funny, is that we took 3 or 4 takes just to do the intro. Right, so we're working out the kinks here. Okay, it's fine. You know, it's all good. Like, we got this, right? And also on that point, if you do have comments on our new format or newer format and how we're kind of doing things, I welcome those too. We always welcome feedback. So
speaking of takes, it took me on the outro music you're about to hear. It took me about 5 takes to get the guitar solo that I thought was finally like okay enough. Now, for public consumption. So,
by the way, do you want to make a comment about that, about the music? Because the music is very specifically chosen, and for a reason.
Well, the music was specifically chosen because I and my colleagues wrote it and performed it.
And hearing, what's your band name?
OCDC.
That's awesome.
I know. It's fun. It's silly. But yeah, that first tune, the intro tune was a specific riff that I wrote. And the last tune was a chord progression that I wrote, and we recorded a rough demo and soloed over it. So I hope you like it. And if you don't, you know, maybe keep that opinion to yourself.
And probably about 5% of our audience know any of the words you just used, but that's okay. It's cool.
It's all good.
Yeah, it's all good. Thanks so much.
Enjoy the outro music. Bye.
Take care, everyone. Bye.
Thank you for listening to Protecting Your Practice. Be sure to visit protectingyourpractice.com to connect with us, continue the conversation, and access additional information. As a reminder, the information on this podcast does not constitute legal advice. Listeners should contact their own attorney or paid consultant for all decisions regarding their own practice.